guys, it's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Top of the program, rate, review, and subscribe. My guest this week is Cam Luke from NBL Overtime and the Commentary Booth. This completes the NBL Overtime Monopoly collection that I was seeking for. I've had Liam Santamaria, Guy Neville, Corey Homicide, and now Cam Luke. I guess they're like the railroads, Fenchurch, King's Cross, etc. So I guess that makes me the thimble. Mellow thimble, maybe. I've spoken to all of them and I like their talents and the way they complement one another. And this might sound silly, but they're all like a character from The Wizard of Oz in a way. Liam is the brain, and these are all favorable, but Liam is the brain, Corey is the heart, and Cam Luke is Dorothy, I suppose. He grounds the show, he gives it a home, serving as its host. Maybe that's a ridiculous comparison, but let's keep going. I like to think that the content and media of the NBL is in good hands with this group of three, or four if you include Guy as well. The fact they've all taken the time to chat to me says a lot. I mean, the NBL is seemingly going into, if not tough, certainly uncertain times. And these are the type of guys you want in your corner. They get their hands dirty. They muck it up with the public. They're out there kissing babies, selling the league. And I really appreciate it and like it. With Cam, we talk about a number of things, including The Last Dance. Now, when we recorded this, we'd only seen episode 1 and 2. 3 and 4 hadn't come out. We recorded on Friday afternoon, and it's now Tuesday morning. So we talked about those two episodes of The Last Dance, the dreams and thoughts that Cam had, and the basic crux of it is, are Cam's belief on the Bulls, Jordan, Pippen and co. being challenged or reaffirmed by this latest documentary? We talked about NBL Rewind, which at that time the latest was the 2009 elimination final between the Wildcats and the Crocodiles. We talked about Cam's idea for the NBL Wildcard and other crazy or interesting ideas, both in the structure of the league and content ideas for the NBL into NBL 21 and beyond. We also talked about the ways of increasing the amount of content around team building and acquisitions, signings in the NBL. The appetite for that sort of stuff is pretty strong. How do you feed it? We talked about will we see a push back towards maturer content? We talked about that. We talked about the perceived Melbourne bias, the M for Mary BL and alike, and criticisms that Overtime's had for that reason. We talked about the finals. If the finals had gone to five games, would the Wildcats still have won? We talk about the decision by the NBL to award a winner and so forth. And then we end with my version of yes or no. And if you want to skip straight to that for a bit of a laugh, that comes at the 1 hour and 3 minute mark. This was a fun, sprawling chat. Cam and I spoke for about 45 minutes before and after, just privately. Cam Luke is a very open guy, and you will see why right here. Okay, so yeah, book week. I mean, you've read Jordan books, or at least consumed Jordan content. The Last Dance, first two episodes. Has anything you've read or watched, are your impressions of them being reaffirmed or challenged?
I'm neutral at the moment. Obviously, only seen the first two eps, and a lot that came out of it. Like with the Jordan stuff, Jordan Rules, that book by Sam Smith that was written on that second championship year was pretty deep. So it gave you a bit of an indication as into how Jordan kind of was controlling, or at least went about his business, and might not have always come across as the nicest person. I must always say this as well, that I think too often in life we get caught up in, like, after the moment, saying, oh, geez, Jordan wasn't very nice or whatever it might be. I might be a harsh human being in stuff like this. And I reckon for about 3 months, I argued I was hosting a radio show in Melbourne around the time that the Tiger Woods situation broke. And I don't condone what Tiger Woods did away from the golf course, but it didn't. And I was arguing about the fact that it not once did it stop me believing that Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer of all time. I don't condone what he did, but we didn't love Tiger Woods because he was a great husband or a great family man. We loved what he did on the golf course and continues to do to an extent to this day. So that's something that we sometimes mirror up off and on. I'm not saying you should respect them in their personal lives as much as you did before some scandals broke, but that's how I looked at this last dance doco, when it was getting talked about that MJ might not be seen as, you know, a great guy, or people might not like him as much. I was like, this will not happen at all if you know Michael Jordan and you follow the Chicago Bulls or basketball, because he's the greatest of all time. And the fact is that going forward, we thought he was the greatest of all time because of what he did on the court in games, end of careers, whatever it might be. not the fact that he might have been a harsh teammate at times. So none of that really surprised me early. Not even the anger towards Jerry Krause. I think that it's somewhat unfounded. I'm not suggesting he was a great guy, and I'm always on the side of the players, but he did put this team together. It's ridiculous that, as so many people have pointed out, that he then ripped them apart in the Phil Jackson situation and how he wanted Tim Floyd earlier than he actually got him, and all the weird endings to a dynasty. But I'm also like, you know what? First couple of episodes so far haven't really surprised me too much, but occasionally the villain is sometimes the wrong guy, and I reckon Scottie Pippen's agent should be more of a villain than what Jerry Krause should be in some regards, in particular to Pip's contract.
I think for me personally, like, I just felt Pippen came out a little bit the villain in this. I know they didn't try to, but from what I was hearing, and then so what I'm excited for going forward, and while I'm giving this answer, you have a think about my question, which is, what are you hoping to get answers to in the future? But I think Pippen came away as the villain because he delayed that surgery and was just behaving in a way that I thought wasn't particularly, honourable is probably a word you could use. But going forward, are they going to talk about the day he sat out the game because he wasn't getting drawn up the game when he shot? And I think 94, 5. So Pippen could be kind of become the villain in this thing, which rightly or wrongly is certainly an avenue you could play.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to, I'm not sure if this question was even asked, or like, they win the championship and we all kind of now know that it got disbanded and they never played, or Michael Jordan didn't play for the Bulls again and Pippen went to Houston and all the rest of it. Did they fight for this? Like, did they fight to try? I know they kind of all universally agreed, last dance and all the stuff they had to go through and the mental wearing down emotionally would have been hard. And I'm sure we'll see that more of that over the next little while. But there was no real team that was going to be dominant. It was a lockout year, of course, after that next year. It was a shortened season. The Spurs beat the Knicks in a championship. You know, Spurs, you know, Tim Duncan had become better, but they hadn't exactly really added a great deal. I think the only team that had significant salary cap space was, in fact, Houston Rockets, who then went out and got Scottie Pippen that he wouldn't have left. So my main question is, did they fight at the end of 98, Jackson, Jordan, Pippen, Rodman? Did they say, you know what, we've ran it back. We've won it again. And we don't really see a legitimate challenger outside the Jazz who are getting older. That's a question I want to know. Did they actually fight for this, or did they just go, that's it, it's done. Krause, you do what you want to do. Pip, you go there. Rodman, you go to LA. Jordan's going to go smoke cigars for a couple of years and Phil Jackson, put your feet up and we'll see you in a couple of years' time when you take over the Lake Show and do it all again. But that's a question for me.
I think I have a sort of an answer for you. I mean, I heard Sam Smith in an interview recently, and he said that Reinsdorf approached the three majors, Pippen, Jordan, and Phil Jackson, and said, if you want to do it again, I'll give you all one-year contracts. Apparently, the three of them didn't want to do it, Jordan and Phil Jackson included. But that, whether that's, you know, that's one thing. But you talked about a couple of things, and I wasn't going to talk about this, but I mean, it's interesting to see what happens thereafter. Like, Pippen gets traded, right? And Pippen gets traded on January 21st, 1999. January 22nd. He gets traded for a guy by the name of Roy Rogers and a second round pick. Roy Rogers never plays in the NBA thereafter. They give him away for next to nothing. And there were some deals that happened that year that, or in that offseason, that perhaps could have helped the Bulls retool around. Let's say if Jordan's the only man standing, he's the only man who wants to do it. Doug Collins had just been fired by the Pistons. He was available. Who, while Jordan says, oh, I only want to be coached by Phil Jackson, he does come back 3 years later for Doug Collins. So there's that. And then there's also the fact that it was a trade with a guy by the name of Eddie Jones, who was a 20-point scorer from the Lakers, who you would have thought they were desperate to get rid of to make room for Kobe. There's this thought that they could have retooled. I mean, these are all these like silly arguments that we'll see on Twitter and the internet everywhere. But it's you're right. That's my question. I had the same question. Could they have kept going? And the answer for Sam Smith gives is Jordan didn't want to do it.
It's interesting too, because it was a shortened season and they slammed 50 games in around 3 months.
It's a 203-day break. That's the longest break Jordan would have seen, including his baseball springtime, because he's still working in that time, presumably. So I'm with you. I think they definitely should have done it again. But I mean, that's the documentary.
Interesting, and I guess we'll see how it plays out. We did see Pippen and Rodman. And I'll tell you something that I'm not sure we're going to see a great deal of, and I reckon a lot of people have actually forgotten this, or at least there's this hardcore basketball people like you and I.
This is hard. This is real hard.
You know what? Jordan was pretty good at Washington.
Now, I agree.
He wasn't He wasn't Jordan. And this is what we do in everything. And athletes are a victim of their own standard. Their standard of excellence, we measure them unfairly as their career goes on. And if you want to look closer to our shores, Gary Ablett Jr. is a perfect example. Last couple of years, everyone's been trying to retire him. It's like, you know what? He's a good player. He's not the best player we've seen for the last decade when he was maybe the best player. In fact, I think in my generation, the best player I've seen. But he's not that guy, but he's still a really handy player. Michael Jordan goes to the Washington Wizards, plays a different role with a young team, drafted Kwame Brown, so he's got no one to blame but himself there, but was actually really good for those 2 years where it was like, you know what, he's giving you 24, 25. He's not going to win you an NBA championship, but he wasn't surrounded with the pieces.
Yeah.
But we kind of just sort of fobbed that off a little bit because he wasn't the Jordan that we'd expected. He was damn near 40 when he was doing his thing.
And it comes after still like a five-year break of sedentary. And also, don't forget, he quits the season and straight away severs a tendon in his finger with a cigar cutter. Now, you could say that happens regardless, but then I would have thought if he's training for basketball, he's not smoking 10-inch long cigars like he is in this documentary every day, you know? So,
to be fair, I'm not 100% certain that's accurate. I like to believe, well, I do believe that he spent a lot of his time. Now, I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. I've got a lot of vices, drinking being the main one.
Right,
but, you know, anytime I see Jordan, I'm like, you know what? I could go a cigar. Now, I don't know how long it would take me to get through the 15-incher that he had on episode one of The Last Dance, but I could go a cigar right now.
You leave them lingering around. They're the type of thing you light and then delight and light back up. They improve with over time, like wine, apparently. I'm no aficionado, but they do seem very fun.
True.
I want to jump on. So I've had Liam Santa Maria on the podcast. I've had Corey Homicide Williams on the podcast. And I've also had Guy Never on the podcast. So I've kind of had everyone from Overtime. You're now the last piece. I consider it sort of like, I would say Parkland and Mayfair, but there's more of you. So I've kind of got like Regent Street, Bond Street and Oxford Street now. But then it's four. So it's probably the railroads if you're familiar with Monopoly. So this is a fun moment to complete that little Monopoly. Hopefully that can go well. I want to talk about NBL Rewind. In particular, the episode you just did, what was last night, I presume, but the others. Great idea. And how'd you get it off the ground?
So obviously when the season finished, the NBL season finished and NBL Overtime, which is still continuing, obviously, and the coronavirus really started to take hold, Liam and I are both involved in NBL One in different aspects. I host the NBL One TV show over the winter season as well, over that season. So there's going to be a fair bit of content gap when it comes to the official NBL channels and you know, production and content wise. So we had a bit of a chat about different ways that we could come up with stuff to keep one, us busy, but also two, to satisfy the need for basketball fans and any fans right now who are looking desperately to have some content and be able to in worrying, stressful times, something to take their mind off for a couple of minutes, have a bit of a chat and hopefully bring a bit of small joy in what's a pretty uncertain world. So yet again, like nothing overly original in it. We just go back. We're like, hey, man, we just watch some old games and we just catch up. Liam and I will catch up and have a chat. And you know, essentially that's how that sort of started. It obviously helps a little bit. Liam and I being huge basketball people, we grew up obviously both playing extensively and going into a place where we knew a lot of these stories already, or at least not exactly every single moment that happened on the court, but we had a fair idea as to how certain things happened. So it allows us to be able to say, you know what, back in 94, DMAC, that season was great. And that's early on in our careers. Obviously, Liam and I both being based in Melbourne, spent a lot of time at the Glass House or at what used to be the Tennis Centre, now is Rod Laver. So we went to a lot of these games. So a lot of those sort of our ideas were already, I guess, conformed. And watching games either jog those emotions or actually change certain ideas or certain perceptions we had of certain things. So to be able to do that is incredibly fun. You know, everyone's going back watching old games right now and whatever sport you love right across the world. So for us to be able to go back and do it in the NBL is extremely exciting and something we would have probably, to be honest, something we probably both would have been doing anyway. So we thought, stuff it. We may as well turn it into a product and see how it goes. And Liam and I and well, actually, this works perfectly into last night's episode. We have the easy job. And I say this about, I have the privilege of working in sport, NBL, AFL. I sit down sometimes on a couch, sometimes behind a desk, and then just talk about what I see. And it's fun. If it's talkback radio, I'm doing it at the time, I'll argue about it. And that's, I think, the best job in the world. Well, it is for me anyway. So Liam and I have an easy job. Like we and Corey, we get to every Tuesday night, NBL overtime, get to sit there and talk about whatever the hell we want to talk about. And then Guy, who obviously with NBL overtime is a bit different, but with NBL rewind, he has to edit it up a little bit. You know, sometimes we waffle on. No harder job than Guy Neville, who is the brains trust behind all of this, than what he would have had after this particular episode, because you've seen it. Homicide was psyched. He was pumped and he was dropping the magic early. So the editing and the beeping that Guy would have had to do.
A couple got through.
The fine tooth comb. I don't envy him yesterday when he had to go through it all and sort it all out. It was a great deal of fun. It was great seeing Homicide talk about what's a great basketball game.
Oh,
With his eyes just, you know, light up and the passion behind it. But yeah, I don't envy Guy what he had to do, because I would almost certainly say that yesterday was the most amount of editing, post-production editing he's had to do.
Well, this was the game we're talking about. It's 2009, Crocs, Cats, Elimination Final 1. Now, to sort of, spoiler alert, I was at that game. And I hate to have you on and talk at you a bit about it, but I want to, there were some questions posed where I got to tell. So first of all, this one. Talk about a storyline, theme, conflict, character, point of view. It had a beginning, a middle, an end, and the underdog won. Tick, 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 tick. Hollywood script all the way through. No one thought the Crocodiles were going to win this game. They had lost to the Wildcats perennially, both at home and on the road, by a big margin. It was crazy. Yep. So I was at this game, living in Perth at the time. I have photos to prove I was there, but this was 2009. The film Knocked Up with Seth Rogen, if you know it, had just come out. So I was in a dirty man competition with a friend. So I have proof, but I prefer not to show it around. The name Simon Devlin. Simon Devlin keeps coming up, right? He was a guy who sat courtside at Perth. I think his trash talk was always pretty like gamesmanship. It wasn't ever like crossed a line, but he would follow these players up and back. And he always, to his credit, he always chose the best player. He didn't pick on the easy. He went for the best. I always thought it was like, I thought that's not for me. I wouldn't do it, but I never begrudged him doing it. But that was one thing. But here's a story that I liked. So that season, and I don't think it was from this particular game, but it was involving Connor Henry and Isaiah Victor. So this team, this Perth team was too stacked. Like they had Loughton, Matt Knight, PC, Darnell Hinson, K-Porn. Like it was just too many guys. And we've seen it this year in the NBL where depth is it's not, it sometimes be your worst asset.
Yep.
And I remember at a timeout, and I was real close to the bench, which is not where I normally sat, but anyway, they were coming back from a timeout and Connor Henry was explaining something and he must have got the impression that Isaiah Victor wasn't paying attention or didn't hear him, not too sure. So as they're walking back on the floor, he reaches out to sort of grab Victor by the he reaches out to grab Victor and sort of clarify the point, and he goes, Isaiah, you know, have I made myself clear? And to this day, it's still the biggest standoff I've seen in sports, but without any cursing, just it was all said without saying anything, where they were looking at each other and they're holding each other. And there was this a space and a pause you could park a bus in. And there's locked eyes with each other. And then Victor looks down at Connor, who's holding his hand, looks back up, connects eyes and goes, just says one word. He goes, crystal. As in crystal clear, and then walks back on the floor. It was an exchange I'll never forget. The other thing I wanted to say about this is Lockie Reed. Okay, Lockie Reed is as culpable in the madness that happened during this game and after as anyone. Now, not directly, and certainly not intentionally, but Lockie Reed was doing the court side at that time at Challenge Stadium. He was the best of that I've ever seen. Like people say the greatest showman, P.T. Barnum, I say Lockie Reed. He just whipped this crowd and he had no regard for sort of the court side announcer's gentleman's agreement. He spoke not over free throw shooters of the opponents, but certainly like the moment it was out of their hands, there was a comment about whether it was going in. He was amazing. So he really whipped things up.
I actually think we need to see more of that in the NBL. We need to see,
I agree.
And you know, Homicide speaks about that on NBL Rewind last night, talking about home court advantage. And there's no doubt there's an advantage playing in your home gym, sleeping in your own bed, understand all of that. But it has been somewhat negated by the first class travel that people have nowadays, you know, when it comes to strength and conditioning or medicinal or whatever it might be. There's no doubt that the gap between home court advantage and being on the road has lessened, even though I don't think it's 50-50, obviously. But I think that in all sports in Australia, we're too nice. Like, I don't want to harp on AFL, but the opposition team gets a banner and a theme song. If they win, they get another theme song. Like, I just don't think that should be the way. So Lockie, who is brilliant broadcaster, of course, done some work with him this year in NBL commentary, and then, of course, I've known him for a little while now through radio networks and all the rest of it. Brilliant. Unbelievably brilliant. I want to see more of that. If I want to see a court announcer speak when a dude is shooting his second foul shot and maybe about to give everyone burgers, bring it, because it's only going to help the intensity of every game and try and raise it and raise it and raise it, and then, you know, what that only makes for better basketball.
The other thing was Challenge Stadium. So Challenge Stadium was a court that shared the one roof with a swimming complex, right? So this building, you don't see it anymore. It was so hot in that place, but sweaty, and then combined with this chlorine-y smell, like there was a toxicity in the air. It was something else. Yeah. And also because it was so hot and balmy and sweaty, like the booze just went through you, like it just coursed through your veins like Usain Bolt in the 100-meter dash. Like, it was so quick. It just went straight to your head for whatever reason. That little hint of chlorine, that little bit of heat, that little bit of humidity, it all came together. So that was certainly a factor. And I think Hinder talks about it in the pregame where he talks about, like, you know, drink, you know, glug, glug, glug. End of the game. Santa Maria, Liam made the question, like, how close this came to a Philippines-type situation. Mm-hmm. And the answer is real close. But the only thing that saved it was a point that you made, was about Russell Hinder really saved this thing from going tipping over the edge, I feel. And it's not so much it was what he did with his play. He grabbed a whole bunch of offensive rebounds late, and you could feel the crowd was kind of, it was digesting the loss. You could tell these offensive rebounds were taking the tight finish out of it. So Corey's dunk at the end was more of like a, what have I got written here? It was a clincher rather than like a game winner. If that had been a game winner where he took the lead from like 2-4 and it was that close, this thing would have, there would have been a homicide of not the Corey Wombs variety. It would have been, because the dunk was, the Perth crowd had time to digest it and
esteemed it.
Mm-hmm. But, and the other thing, other than Simon Devlin, is, and you see it in the telecast of the game, the lower bowl of the Challenge Stadium had a lot of younger kids that sat there, prepubescent kids, sort of like 10, 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the sound in that stadium was real low. It was made of concrete. So the sound was real low, and nothing cuts through that sound like the sound of like a squeaky preteen, you know, like, and the kids at these games had license to say the most vile stuff. It was kind of like, you know, Devlin's one thing, but these kids, you know, and nothing cuts through it. So, and I'm going to curse a little bit, but you'd hear them say stuff like, oh, you know, Corey, and it'd fly, you'd hear it everywhere. And when you're a player, and you hear something horrible and you turn and look at some fresh-faced little rosy kid with a silly haircut and whatever, it just added to the frustration. So I don't think that gets talked about enough when people talk about the jungle at that point, because these kids were just running wild in the lower bowl. But that was my take on that.
I got to say this as well. I never went to Challenge Stadium, and something that watching NBL rewind a little bit, there's obviously stadiums that, you know, obviously no longer exist, or at least in a basketball situation anymore. Mm. So something I was sort of in trying to formulate in my mind, and hopefully from a personal experience in NBL 21, I'm going every stadium. I'm going to travel. I got up to Sydney a few times this year. I've been to Adelaide a couple of times, being obviously closer to Melbourne. But from a personal situation, hopefully we can turn into some type of work thing, part of NBL Overtime. That and we were going to take NBL Overtime on the road for a grand final game. Of course, coronavirus stopped us a little bit there, unfortunately. But yeah, every stadium. So, like, you know, I haven't been to RAC Arena yet. Want to get there. I haven't been to Cairns for a long time. I have been there in a work sense about 5 or 6 years ago. So I want to get back up to there. You know, obviously, Brisbane, when they're rocking now with their home court, and how cool that was when they were winning that last game and smacking Cairns around. I want to experience that. So something from a personal perspective in NBL 21, and hopefully the fans I'm sure they're all going to be very welcoming and we can go and grab a beer after a game. But that's something that watching the old NBL rewind games and stuff like that, you miss out on certain things where these wonderful games are being played. So something I want to do in the new season is get out and amongst it and travel a little bit and take in some NBL games in their own environments, which are always fun.
Here's an idea. I've got something for you, a little game for you. NBL rewind's a nice idea. Let's say you've got Larry Kesselman in front of you or whoever, and you can pitch another idea that's not NBL rewind. Have you got something straight off the top of your head where it's like, oh, I would like to do this in the NBL media landscape?
I would like to, and yet again, not really original, but I like, and I think we spoke off air about this, there's some more conflicts that are starting to happen just a little bit and adding some intensity to it. I think a lot of it has happened with the digital age. Last couple of years, podcasts like your own, Hammer's show with the basketball show. Of course, you see Alex Loughton up there doing a great podcast in Cairns. You see Greg Heyer. See journalists in South Australia doing it for Adelaide. And of course, the Sydney Kings do their own podcast. I really like the idea of an around the horn type situation. So, you know, we have, you know, a person from every state or at least the main basketball states or at least with as a representation. It might not be every single week. But, you know, we have someone in Melbourne. You know, obviously going to throw myself in being a moderator. But we can have, you know, we get to... You know, we get over to West Australia. We have a Tim Gossage who does wonderful stuff with Channel 10 who just goes nuts. And I've done a lot of radio stuff with Channel 10. You know, I love his work. You know, if you get into Sydney, you've got, you know, Shane Heal or Steve Carfino. You got a Brad Rosen. You know, you get to Adelaide, you've got a John Casey. And while there is, you know, there's some biased attitudes, of course, and, you know, or perceived to be biased at different times. It doesn't necessarily have to be what's happening on court. There could be the political point of view. Yeah, we're going to have an all-star game. And then everyone's having an argument as to why their city or why their arena and their backyard should host it. Or when it comes to playoff games and something with NBL Rewind, I'm huge on wild card games. Those one and dones are so fun. You have great basketball. You have shocking basketball for a matter of minutes. The intensity goes through the roof. And that's what that 09 elimination final was. So something like an around the horn situation where we're able to, and hopefully with you know, Zoom, you know, it makes it a bit easier nowadays with the way we're embracing technology and it's working so well for us. But yeah, to be able to and have those conversations, like I'm an old fashioned, I guess, broadcaster because I've no dramas with blueing verbally. It's never personal. So I'll say, hey, this is my opinion. There's your opinion, okay? Well, you may sway me and I'll put my hand up and apologize. I'll be like, no, well, you were way off. And I like those ideas. And that's what I think that Homicide does so particularly well on NBL Overtime is he has those ideas and he sticks fat with them even when they're wrong, which is sometimes. But, yeah, that's what I would like to do and look at in a situation where there is, you know, a little more of a, you know, round the horn type situation, stealing it from ESPN. So, but the NBL products have really taken off the last couple of years. We've been lucky with NBL Overtime that it is the digital age where people have more scope to be able to broadcast stuff. It's been a great deal of fun, and that's what I'd look at.
A small thing I'd like to see is, you know how the AFL, when the grand final comes along, has the cartoon of the two teams? I'd like to start doing that. And the guy I get is Adam Ballinger. He does a very interesting comedy style that has a basketball slant. I don't know why I say that, but just the style of it. I'd get him to start doing that every year. It's Adam Ballinger. He's doing a poster. It's United, whatever their logo is. I actually don't know. Wildcats, you know. I think that's in a tradition. You know, and people seem to forget the NBL is a 40-plus year league. Like that's a nice tradition to start. That's fun and interesting.
In particular, in fact, I'm just going to – I know this is a podcast. I'm just going to walk away for 2 seconds.
Walk away. Yeah, there you go.
So, obviously, being a Bulldogs fan, this is very, very rare. But for people who are not seeing me right now, I've got the wig post at the Herald Sun, obviously, in 2016 when the Bulldogs won the premiership. But, yeah, that's – and posters and spectators and fans can, you know, proudly don them and say, hey – and you hand them out. That's what happens. I've got a very special one from the Herald Sun who were nice enough to give me one. But you're leaving the MCG and Grand Final night. They're ready to go. So if you're leaving, you know, RAC Arena And Adam Ballinger's done a wonderful job and he's an outstanding artist, and they're just handing him out or paying for a dollar. I think it goes towards a charity. Yep. It is a brilliant idea and just adds little merchandise to what, of course, when you're a fan, a sports fan, and your team wins, just adds to the emotion, delirium you're already feeling.
I agree. I'm very jealous of the wildcard game idea of yours, the Cam Luke Cup. Okay. People say the L.M. ending. I say the Cam Luke Cup.
I agree.
Really, really good idea. Mm-hmm. One off. I'd actually go one step further. I'd go not just the wild card game, but the wild card game. You bring in Will Smith, wild. The soundtrack's taken care of. Yes. So you do a playoff of 5 versus 6 to see who then goes on for 4-5 for the fourth spot. You get two games for the price of one. Especially in this season where you had Melbourne, Brisbane, and New Zealand right on the cusp there. Like, this is the one year where the wild card made the most sense because it was brutal to all three of those teams to really not have that push towards the end. And sports do this. So, I was about to say, like, if you all-star game, like, have you got another idea for a game that exists much like the Cam Luke Cup?
Yeah, I'm working on something at the moment, a little side project about how a possible NBL season in my mind, and the All-Star game, the wild card game, everything I drop is always based on being a fan.
Yep.
So, and that's what when I think, hey, let's have a wild card game, players are like, no way. It's like, you know what? As a fan, we will lose our mind over it. All-Star game, we will lose our mind over it if it's done in the right way. I really like... In this particular year, and we're going to look at probably a changing NBL 21. I've got an idea. We might shorten the season a little bit. I'm actually going to go one step further and have two wild card games. Ooh. And there's only 9 teams in the league. 1 and 2 get automatic home court advantage for semifinals, best of 3. 3 plays 6. 4 plays 5. Ooh. So you've got to finish top 2 to get a double chance. We're going to see more teams in the playoffs, but I think with a shortened year and a little bit of change in the structure, I think it works for one particular year. I think there's a new normal coming, as you touched on earlier. Mm. So I like that. And I think there's room for an All-Star game. Like, I get, yet again, it's an interesting part economically, commercially, the way we view the world and where we're going to be sitting. And if there's no fans allowed in stadiums, even in the early part of 2021, then an All-Star game is redundant for this particular NBL year. But I think it's a perfect example. The Blitz last year, they took it to Tasmania. We all had a ball. First time, I'd actually been to Tasmania only once in my life, the actual main part of Tasmania of Hobart, which was a wedding. I had to fly in, fly out pretty much. I've been to King Island a couple of times to play golf, but I hadn't really seen much of Tasmania at all. It was great. Yeah. Had all the teams there and exposes them to a new supporter base who may not have necessarily had a great deal of national sport in their backyard. They've got some AFL games down there, as we know, but it was good fun. And that's where I think the All-Star game should actually have a look at. Now, okay, what are we going to do in an All-Star game? You know what we do? Let's have it in Canberra.
Non-NBL team locale.
Non-NBL cities. You know, have it. There you go. Where do you want to have it? You know what? Let's have it in Townsville. You know, because there are so many deep basketball traditions historically right around the country that don't have an NBL or a WNBL team. Yeah. Of course, Canberra are dominant when it comes to the WNBL side of things in the last couple of years in particular. But if we had an NBL game in Townsville, one, it works as a little getaway. So if you're sort of arming and ah, do I want to play? Hey, Mitch McCarron, you know. You're getting a 3-day trip to Townsville, soak up a little bit of sun, jump on court. Like, we'd pack the joint out.
I agree.
You know, so, like, I know, you know, would we get 15,000 to an NBL All-Star game in Sydney? Possibly. Maybe not in these current circumstances, RAC Arena, of course. But not to take away from what they're seeing on a regular basis. But, hey, you know what? Let's expand this game a little more. Maybe let's go to Darwin.
Al Springs, those AFL games there were great. Yeah, you know?
Exactly. So it sort of breaks it up just a little bit. It deepens the roots of basketball. But I think too often, and I'm guilty of this, we just look at what's happening at the top and we're like, Melbourne, Perth, Sydney are the three biggest cities and they've got pretty good teams, so they're cool to watch and that's where basketball should be. And you know, I think I might even raise this as an all-star game. Got to have it one. Like, let's have it somewhere different. Mm. You know, in particular early, you know, Canberra. And they're going to play, you'd think Illawarra will play some games in there in the next couple of seasons when they work out with their ownership group. You know, Townsville, of course, you know, WNBL team up there. But, like, yeah, there's opportunities to continue to show the NBL in different ways. And I think an NBL All-Star game would be one of them. And I want to see a draft. I want to see, hey, Chris Golding or, you know, two.
Oh, yeah, like, say, Cotton and Machado pick their own team. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and ESPN here in Australia. You know, I like what LeBron and Giannis did. It's, you know, yet again, not original, but if it works, it works. And just, there you go.
Pick, you know what?
Your team.
Pick your team. You know, my idea was this, like, because I always find that the most appealing thing is, when you talk about All-Star game, is, all right, let's try and have an All-Star game in which the best players in the league are all playing competitively. So I'd actually put a prize on the line, and that prize to me would be home court advantage in the finals. Now, that probably doesn't sound a lot of fair to a lot of people. Baseball did something similar with the World Series.
They did.
So there's sort of like, I know it's probably not the fairest thing, but hey, sport's not fair. It's not meant to be. There's a winner and loser every time. There's never a tie. Unless you play again to get an answer. So I would have it where, you know, you sort of team up players from the, let's say there's nine across the ladder, you know, teams in team 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9 are in a team, and then the other one, odd number makes it difficult, but nonetheless. And then the winning team, whoever they represent as their clubs, they, if they make the finals, get home court advantage. I'm that brutal. I don't know. I just think the idea of a mid-season game in which the 10 best guys in the league are on the court at the same time playing with an incentive and at their best is more appealing. The juice of that is worth the squeeze. That's what I think.
Obviously, the baseball, Major League Baseball, did it when it was American League v National League, and it still is. Obviously,
they don't do that anymore. I don't think.
See, they don't do that anymore. I would just make cash. Yet again, commercially, right now, like, hey, you're playing the winning All Star team.
Yeah, that would work too.
$10,000 because brutal. Obviously, you're probably getting all expenses paid trip there. Is what you do. So $10,000 to the winner or each player, the winner. So $100,000. Maybe a couple more for coaches. And if you lose, zero.
Okay.
And you know what? 5 minutes ago in an All-Star game, when it's all tied up,
you got
and
a game.
You might have been screwing around for 3.5 quarters, then you think to yourself, hang on a second. Oh, $10,000 on the line here. So it's $10,000 or nothing. So it's all or nothing. And
perfect.
There's no doubt the NBA have had to find ways, and I really like their ending this year with the Elam ending and how that played out with the NBA. And it was something we all kind of, or speak for myself, kind of mocked. I was like, this ain't going to work. And then when you watch the game, you're like, this is cool. So maybe it's an Elam ending or how we look at it, but there is no doubt there would be a challenge presented. You know, the Pro Bowl in the NFL. I went to a Pro Bowl, NFL Pro Bowl. I left at halftime. It was the worst thing I've ever been to. Like, I was like, this is remarkably... It's the lowest intensity I've ever seen, and I get how All-Star games can sometimes be seen like that. So there's always a challenge presented with NBL All-Star games or any All-Star game, but if they can find a way to find the right mix, I think it's a nice little showcase.
You got before last season, you and Liam Samaria went over to NBA Summer League, and I think that was really interesting because I think there's a real appetite in content for the way NBL teams are built, because it's not a trade system. It's not a draft system. It's something unique. It's a scouting process, which is, you know, we all like Hoop Dreams. That's essentially most of that movie's about scouting.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good conversation to open up. Other than going, because, you know, in that bit you did, you were talking to guys who didn't end up coming to the league. You know, you had Gleason's thoughts on Taco Fall. So you had an NBA interest, you had a G League interest, you had a Euro interest. I really liked it. How do you open up that conversation even more? Because fantasy is real popular. People like this team building kind of stuff. Is there any conversation around how you open up that conversation and make more content about it?
I think it's hard only because clubs are really, really
secretive,
really shut down when it comes to like going to sign a name or right on their verge. So obviously Liam does such a wonderful job. I speak about on our shows we do together about he's a GM in waiting, and there is no doubt that if he ever decides to move out of journalism and broadcast world and pick himself up an NBL GM job, he would be brilliant at it. He's got a great deal of contacts that continue to grow, and his idea towards players and where they sit and how they fit into certain structures and positions is tenfold when it comes to, you know, what I think of, what Homicide thinks of, and what probably a lot of us do think of. Mm. The thing is, and what was really good with NBA Summer League, it was the first time I'd been, was that they were really open. Like, when they're trying to work through a process themselves and they're able to discuss it, you know, Taco Fall, of course, was an interesting conversation because that gained a little bit of momentum when Liam dropped on one of our early shows that there's at least three clubs that have inquired about Taco Fall, and then it always helps when we're sitting there and you've got an NBA GM or an NBL GM or a coach sitting a couple of seats down watching these games, and we start to put two and two together and stuff like that. But they're also in a pretty relaxed atmosphere over there, and I mean that from a fact is, you know, we and media access, we just walk up to, you know, one of the coaches or GMs and say, hey, mate, you know, obviously they knew who Liam was. Half the time they didn't know who I was, but I introduced myself and they were nice enough to have a quick chat for a minute or two to myself and the cameraman. I just think that is, with no draft and such a small window of when scouting and stuff sort of happens, it's almost the optimum at the moment, only because while the season's on, you know, very rarely do they add new players in.
No, very seldom.
And when it comes to a situation with the Next Stars program, which of course is somewhat complicated, not only by the restrictions of getting into the country, but the very fact is that the NBA have announced their pathways development the last week or two about the special G League team that they've put together and that program. Players or coaches or management, they're not going to be open about if they're talking to a high school kid via Jeremy Loliga or the NBL.
Right.
Larry, whatever it might be. So if we were to get word in, see, Isaiah Todd, who was part of this NBA pathway, he, from what I believe, was hell-bent on coming to the NBL. Was hell-bent. I listened to Jonathan Giovanni in the last couple of days on the Woj podcast, and he's like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to come to the NBL. Now, it didn't work out because of the restrictions and coronavirus and all the rest of it. But had we have gone to, or probably Liam, you know, in his role had approached, don't read into, had he gone to Cairns, had he have gone to Mark Beecroft or he'd gone to Mike Kelly in January and said, look, I hear that you're talking to Isaiah Todd, they're not going to be overly open about it because, one, they're focused on what they're doing on court and don't want that to be the story. But two, they don't want all of a sudden someone else to go, well, Isaiah Todd's interested in coming to Australia. Cairns might have opened that door. Mm. Let's see if they want to come to, he wants to come to a bigger market. So I think that in the sense of where it sort of sits, and because there's not a great deal of scouting done within season and there's no draft where you have a particular spot. So the NBA is a little bit different. You can scout all you want because you know that in the end, if you got pick four in the NBA draft, there's only three clubs who can best you. Here in the NBL, if you are a smaller market team and you've been able to go out and recruit someone, it's like if we, you know, we'd heard, you know, Scotty Machado. Oh, geez, Cairns all over Scotty Machado. I'm sure the other clubs knew who he was for sure, but they might be like, well, you know what, let's just have one last roll of the dice here and see if we can snake Machado.
Right.
I loved how open they were at Summer League, but I also think the window isn't particularly big because of everything happens and so much is around the fact there is no draft and there's no set 100% salary cap when we have, of course, the luxury soft on top of that. So that makes the soft cap makes a little bit different.
This year, if you can get to, well, in the future, let's just say, very, very open-ended, PIT tournament. I think get coverage of that because that's where a lot of great NBL talent has come from. So if you add that to Summer League, I think you that's definitely in the right direction because people really love that in content for sure.
Just on quickly on the Summer League, it was the best fun I've had for like 10 days. Like it was so incredible. I'd never been before, as I mentioned before. I do a show here in Melbourne on Channel TV show on Melbourne on Channel 7. So I had to get out of that, which is AFL related. And they were really good about it. But I was like, this is an opportunity that I may never get. And ironically, now we sit here and Summer League, of course, isn't going to happen in its traditional slot in the NBA. So I'm glad that I took the opportunity. I survived my first ever earthquake. Yeah, Liam and I were sitting in, like, I've told this story a million times, but like we were sitting in the stand, Zion Williamson's first game. He got hurt, so everyone had pretty much left. We were just sitting there talking, you know, rubbish, and then the whole thing started rumbling, and Liam turned to me and said, what do we do? I'm like, hard to believe that I'm not an earthquake expert. So we went down onto the foyer And I filmed something, and then we're, and then our cameraman, who is the man, he was like, "Hey, I'm on court here. Get down here. Let's film something now." And we're like, "Is this shit safe?" Pardon the language, but he's from Los Angeles.
Right.
So we rolled down. It was remarkable. The whole 10 days was cool, and hopefully I get an opportunity to do it again sometime soon.
You know what made me laugh? I think you're at, I don't know where you're at, maybe Bellagio. There's a fountain in the background. Gosh, it's Las Vegas. Could be anywhere. And you're doing something with the camera, and Liam's trying to talk about something sensible, and a showgirl walks by with the feathers, and she sort of gets on camera. I think a lot of people in Las Vegas are pretty keen for camera time. And she, and then you go, "Oh, hey, sweetie," like that. And then you come back to the conversation. And Liam can't keep going. He tries. That what I like is the stumble, because he tries to keep going. There's the mild stumble. He keeps going. And then it's just a full collapse. Stephen Bradbury, well, not Bradbury, everyone else over the line. He can't keep going. That's great footage. I've got that on my computer.
Like, just on that. So every time we went to film something on the strip, there was always, as you touched on, there was always someone in Vegas who wondered, "Hey, hello." Yeah. Anytime there's a camera, there's always someone, which adds to it. It was kind of cool. So when we'd actually tried a couple, and someone had walked past and already saw it ever. This girl walked past and actually called, I'm not necessarily saying me, but one of us, "Sweetie," which isn't actually picked up by the microphone. So when I said, "Hey, sweetie," back, it's actually me just replying to what she had called us. Liam then obviously, I think at the time Liam, he tried really, really hard. But that was part of the fun. Our first, we got there, we landed on the 4th of July. Our opening little piece we did, the whole strip was on fire. It was unbelievable. It was going nuts. Mm. And right when we finished, the fireworks started. It was one of the most perfectly, and you know, timing's not my thing normally in any walk of life, but one of the most perfectly timed things I've ever done. So it was an absolute blast, and hopefully we can get back there and you know, sooner rather than later, because it's only going, the cool thing about it was so many Australians and Kiwi players being there. Like, to watch Jock Landale do what he did for that 10 days was so cool. We got to know Deshaun Taylor a little bit. As he worked his way into that Philadelphia rotation, and seeing, you know, Finn Delaney experience that was kind of cool to be in his hotel room doing an interview with him the day before he, you know, slips on an NBA jersey for the first ever time. It was a great deal of fun, you know, from a working perspective, but also from a hardcore basketball guy like me to be able to enjoy that and see the fun that these guys were having was really cool.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about all the new players we've got to look at, we also got a new perspective on Gleason and a few of those NBL guys who gave interviews, which is good. I want to talk to you about podcasting, Cam. So you've jumped over from, like, due to this virus and that, the content has moved from more your radio. Well, maybe it hasn't, but certainly your TV has gone in a different direction. But you got podcasting now. What do you like about the art form, and what changes it from, say, radio? Radio is very similar to podcasting. What makes it different?
In my book, it's the same. So I've got a little bit of a different style radio, and I don't have a full-time ongoing radio show at the moment, but I like the idea, and I was working, or have do occasionally still work at 1116 SEN in Melbourne. So it's talk back. So I sort of see my style as being in a bar. Hey, I got an opinion, such and such. Let's do this. Just like it would be in a bar with someone, less swearing, of course. I've got a dump button though in the radio studio where people are like, "Hey, you know what? I disagree. I was like, "Yeah, cool." And that's why I think sport is so fun. The passion, the emotion around it is so heavily based on the fact that we all have different opinions on watching the exact same thing. Yeah. And we pick up on different ideas, or we have different perceptions, or we end up with a totally different view on what happened, even though we might have viewed and probably did view the exact same game. And that's where my radio sort of style is from. And when it comes to podcasting, that's what I do. I sit here. When it's by myself, I try to have like 10 or 11 minutes only. You can get the Camloo podcast wherever you get this podcast. You can probably get it right next door. I have ideas a little bit different. Obviously, in an off season or no sport, they're all off season at the moment. I just say it the same way. What I do on my podcast is what I do on radio. It's a little bit different. We don't hear a great deal of rants in sport radio here in Australia, and I'll go on 5 or 6 minute rants at different times, and hopefully evoke a little bit of emotion or passion or enough for someone to want to pick up the phone and have a conversation with me, or to fire an SMS. I tell you what, the SEN text machine is the most brutal thing in the history of the world. Social media is rough. And they do not hold back. And that's what I do love about sport. So that's what I try to do in my podcast. It's gearing back up a little bit. I've got a very special Olympic podcast coming, which is related to Sydney Olympics. Oh, it's like 20 years since Sydney Olympics. So that's going to run now over when the Tokyo Olympics should have been, late July, early August. So looking forward to getting into that project, which I'm sort of halfway into right now. I just like the immediacy of it. Like, TV is one thing, and I love TV. Got to wear makeup every now and then, which isn't my forte either. I'm not good looking enough. I don't think to have a TV show, but here we are. I've got four of them. And in radio, I can wear whatever I want. I wear a dull T-shirt, tracksuit pants, thongs. Don't have to do my hair. The thing is that just it's immediate passion, and I really like that. It's a little different with podcasts, but the idea that I can get my thoughts across, and when I put it into social media, you can get back to me via Twitter, via Facebook, via Instagram, DM, text, or whatever you want to do. And while it might not be 100% the same as radio, the principles for what I do is the same, because it's talking about something I love and passionate about and want to give an opinion on.
Speaking about the negativity on social media, like, a lot of people would criticize the NBL in general for being Melbourne-centric. I think even Paul Smith coined the phrase, you know, it's the M for Mary BL. How do you respond to the criticism of that, where, you know, the show is, over time, let's say, for example, is Melbourne-based, and Melbourne is a big team that, you know, warrant conversation. How do you respond to that sort of criticism?
Yeah, look, I guess the situation is where we're based in Melbourne, and Liam and I both grew up playing basketball in Melbourne, so the perception is always going to be how they love Melbourne. And I don't think the show comes across that way.
No, no.
I don't think that we ever are biased. I like to think that I'm not ever really biased. Obviously, I have a soft spot at Melbourne United different times because I did do some stuff for them. And without going too deep into my career about 2 or 3 years ago, you know, I was really, you know, really at a crossroads due to a couple of situations. And Vince Crivelli, the CEO, and Tom Vandervoos, who was the head of radio there, or head of media there at the moment, helped me get back on my feet by allowing me to do some projects. And that was a huge part of being able to reestablish things from a personal career aspect. But I don't think we sit there and, no, we're not openly barracking for Melbourne United to win a championship. I think we're all level-headed. In fact, none of us thought that Melbourne United could beat Sydney Kings in that semi-final series.
That was my next question.
I get the perception of it. I get that we are in Melbourne and we do go to more Melbourne games than anyone else. I know I do, because I'm right across the road from Hisense Arena, where both United and Phoenix play their home games. And if I'm not calling the game, I'm traditionally in the stadium, you know, watching like any other basketball fan. I think it's like anything, you know. I think, you know, if you look at the AFL, it's based in Melbourne, so it's geared towards the Victorian teams. Look at the NRL, well, they're based in Sydney, so they're biased towards Sydney teams. There's no doubt that there is always going to be perceptions from some fans. I don't think anything I've ever said on the show or in a radio interview or whatever it might be has ever been like, because I live in Melbourne and I watch Melbourne games more so than ever. I didn't think, you know, we were actually quite harsh on Melbourne at different times this year. They did underperform it at different times. Look, that's a perception. There's always people who, you know, and Paul Smith, who we spoke earlier about conflicts and rivalry. I think, you know, Paul Smith at Sydney, I think Matt Walsh at the Breakers, I think Hutchie at Melbourne United, they're great for the league. I'm not saying we all need to have outspoken owners that really, you know, are quite high profile. But it adds to the league. If you look at private ownership in other sports and link it to the NBA, you know, Mark Cuban. Now, I'm not saying that I want to see one of these dudes throw a TV monitor on the screen and try and fight Shaq, but, you know, what I think it adds to it. This is where the NBL have really taken off, I think, in the last 18 months, 2 years. It's not just solely about what happens in sport. Sport is an entertainment. Like it's geared towards what happens on the court, obviously, for win-loss records. But, you know, there's so much that makes up sport that allows, you know, the AFL, the NFL, the NFL draft, you know, that started this morning when we're recording this on a Friday. Like, people are just glued into it. Like, it's a 3-day extravaganza normally. Like, you've got to find other ways to make this thing entertaining, not necessarily the 40 minutes on the hardwood. And those owners do stuff like that. So I think Paul Smith sort of flying the flag a little bit for, you know, hey, Sydney is a Sydney guy and doing a great job. But occasionally, you know, they got to, and he may believe that they're Melbourne-centric at different times. Now, I'm not saying I'm privy to every conversation they have, but I think there is a reason that people do it. Fans just sometimes, if their team loses to a Melbourne-based team, it's like, oh, they're biased towards Melbourne. It's like, you know what? Your team played like rubbish for 40 minutes. You couldn't hit a jump shot. You shot 8% from the free throw line. That's why you lost, not the fact that we tipped Melbourne to win. So I also think when it comes to criticism, like you, how I said, I put myself in what I believe to be the best job in the world. It's a public job. And
you
take some heat at different times and you cop it. And, you know, there's lines that you cross, that people cross at different times that I totally do not condone, and that just oversteps the line. But every single abuse I think I've ever got, now I've got a couple of physical threats that I've never really taken too seriously, touch wood, but I also, like, you know what, are you going to abuse me because I didn't think your team was going to win the game? That's fine, you're just passionate, and I like to think that that's where it sort of stops. But yeah, people can be sometimes harsh, but you know, same old.
I agree. And I think with overtime as well, like it's a half hour show, especially when we went to ESPN. Like you can't, sorry to everyone, but what can you do for me? What can I do for you? If you're not newsworthy, you're not newsworthy. You know, I'm sorry. And that's...
Yeah. And unfortunately, and that's why we bought double overtime, and you'll see the current overtime we're doing at the moment is going a little bit longer. But it is like, as much as people don't always want to admit this, Melbourne, Sydney and Perth are the three biggest teams in the NBL. They've got the three, and they're the three most intriguing for different reasons because the pressure's on them. So if Melbourne aren't playing well and they're on a five-game losing streak, then they are the story because a lot of people thought they were going to have a really good year. Now, Sydney, same thing, going a little bit of a slump. Didn't happen, of course, in the regular season too often. Or with Perth the year before, like it's like, hey, they're struggling. They've got to go get another import. And while Perth fans were abusing us, and in the end, it was proven to be incorrect, at that time, we're like, we're only dealing with the facts. This is a Perth team that are pretty good, but if they want to win a championship, I think we need to add another player in here. Now, Trevor Gleeson got it right, won a championship, now won two in a row. But the fact is that the facts that are presented us at that particular time, if there's an angle that we believe that team can get better, that's the one we're going to take. And those bigger franchises, bigger clubs are normally the ones who will focus on. And that's, I think, all media, not necessarily just the NBL.
I think it's Winston Churchill who put it best. He goes, like, when the facts change, so does my opinion. And I think people heard that more and more. I want to talk about Perth and Sydney, that grand final. Simple question. Well, actually, no, complex question, but perhaps a simple answer. If those two games have been played, who do you think was going to win them?
It's a tough, like, I think it would have won five.
I would have gone five. Who's winning?
I think it would have went five. I think Sydney would have gone back to Perth and got the win. I think a little bit of extra time helps Andrew Bogut, you know, obviously, no doubt. Mm. But then it then hurts him maybe a little bit on the back end, playing a couple of days later. Perth were outstanding, and Bryce Cotton is just on a whole nother level. We spoke about this in NBL Overtime. It is so cool to see guys or girls who are dominant and are perceived to be the best stand up and dominate big games.
Yeah,
I love seeing it. Like, I hate always relating back to the AFL, but Dustin Martin, two grand finals for Richmond, dominant. Like, you just love it. And that's what Bryce Cotton did. Wins MVP, comes out in game one of that semi-final against Cairns on a Friday night, and was unstoppable. And what was an unbelievable game. And
yeah, great
was
game.
The run was the reason they won. Like, 100%, solely the reason they won. So, for him to be able to do what he did in that grand final series only in the three games, it was hard to bet against him, mainly because Casper Ware was having by far the worst stretch of his, even say his NBL career, of his career. Like, he had a really good collegiate career. He's been great as a pro all around the world. This is he played his five worst consecutive games, I think, he's ever played Casper Ware. So if he would have had the snap out of it, for them to win two more games. And I'm not betting against him doing that because I've seen Casper up close and personal do some amazing things. But if Casper Ware hadn't have stood up in say, a game five and been really good, or at least close enough to how good we know he can be, it would have been very hard to see Sydney winning in five. But, yeah, it's one of the, you know, I think we're both Bill Simmons fans. It's one of the most ultimate what ifs.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I think the biggest thing for the conversation boils down to me is rest for Bogut, because when there was rest, he played well and they won. And I think the other thing is, I think with Sydney, I do think Perth were going to win it, whether it was 4 or 5. But the thing that I thought with Sydney was, I feel like they, and this is not an idea of my own, this is something someone's told me, I feel like they were really focused on Melbourne. They had nerves in that one game where they got blown out big time. And when they got past Melbourne, I think there was a little bit of a sigh of relief, like, okay, whew, our major rival is done. And I think they mistakenly put that title on Melbourne United rather than Perth, who was going to be their final aggressor. That's what I think anyway. And it's funny as well, like there was some pretty good storylines there where Casper Ware was in a slump, Cotton was in a peak. You know, it was kind of, they played the same position. Yeah. And also Trimble, like, you know, let's put him in that conversation as well, where he had that huge slump. Vickerman brings him off the bench, does a few new things. He comes back up. Like, it was the point guard spot there. There was this rich tapestry, this triangle between them, but particularly Ware and Cotton. It's just a shame.
Dude, no doubt. People actually forget this. The game where they won game one against Melbourne, Casper Ware late was huge.
Yeah.
So when I say 5 poor games in a row, he was really good late. Just over 4 quarters, he wasn't as brilliant as we know he can be. And that was going to be the big question mark. I often, your point there too, Sydney win at home, there's no doubt it's a relief when you get over anyone. And obviously Melbourne being a huge rival for them. Get over them, close game, okay. I reckon Perth, similar thing on the same night, of course. But getting on a plane kind of focuses you a little bit because you don't have to be at home. You're not just sitting at home sort of waiting around for this game to finish with a relief would still probably linger around. Perth had all right, we won. What are we doing tomorrow? We get on a plane. We're going to get game one. And it just sharpened you up just a little bit, I think, just slightly. Maybe not enough to win a championship compared to not winning it. But I think I won't say an advantage, but I think they almost forced to focus rather than dwell on what happened the night before, when you got to get on your team tracksuit, pack for game one and get on a plane and just be together. It's just a crew. It's just a team, you know, that's, all together jumping on a plane.
Because you just think like that, Cotton,
not to say that's why Perth won game one.
Yeah, sorry, Cam, you're saying?
Mate, yeah, I'm not suggesting that's the sole reason they won game one, but I'm not saying Sydney would have won game one had they have been on the road for game one as opposed to Perth. But I also think that, you know, sometimes things snap you back into focus, which I'm not saying Sydney weren't focused, but Perth were like, all right, what are we? Oh, geez, we've got a 9 o'clock flight. You know, hey, we've got recovery at 7, we're in the pool, and then we're on the airport, we're on the way. So, but it was going to be a wonderful series. And yeah, it's one of the, you know, something I will say, those games 2 and 3 in front of no fans, which Liam Sandemaria and Corey both called one of those games, and they said how strange it was. But to be in that situation, to play in front of no fans, and for the game to not drop a level. The intensity was high. It was high-quality basketball. It's a credit to every single player and coach who was a part of those two contests. It was great to see, because it's not always easy to do, no doubt. Although, mind you, I played a lot. In fact, I played all my career in front of no fans, so I have no idea what playing in front of a fan was actually like. So I was disappointed no one called me for some advice.
Tell me, you agree with the decision the NBL made to give it to Wildcats, or don't you?
I do. I just think that in the end, they led 2-1. I think that Chris Pongrass.
Did you see the Kings as a forfeit? I actually saw the Kings as a forfeit. You didn't see it that way, no?
No, I didn't see it as a forfeit, only because of the circumstances. And Chris Pongrass, who I have a good relationship with, who's the CEO of the Sydney Kings, had a conversation a couple of days later, and we had a bit of a chat, and I won't go too deep into the details, but he was sort of talking about, like, players, you know, worried about being, you know, going overseas, getting home with Casper Ware and Lazada getting into Brazil and stuff like that. So I didn't see it as a forfeit. I just seen it as just unbelievable circumstance of the times that we all live in. You know, and if we look where we, like, here we are, what, month and a half later.
Yeah.
Sitting around stuck inside our houses, which is, you know, something we never thought happened. So, well, instead as a forfeit, I believe that there was miscommunication possible. Maybe they maybe they thought, now would it have changed it? Probably not. But maybe they thought, you know what, we're going to put our hand up. We don't feel comfortable anymore for these reasons, which I totally understand with. And it might have taken by surprise that the NBL did give the championship in to the Wildcats. But I also think the Wildcats led 2-1. They led 2-1 in the series.
Yep.
It's not like you sort of coast. You're like, ah, we'll let this one go because we've still got two games to go. It's not, you know, every single series changes based on the game before. I think that's, you know, obviously just common sense. But I also think they were both played 100%. They both went out and had a real crack. It wasn't like there was anything. There was no players unavailable due to the coronavirus. So there was no changing or weakening of the team. So in the end, I think the right decision was made. And in particular with the emotion that you did see from the Perth Wildcats when they made that announcement, and great job of the Wildcats and their media and the social media and getting it out there of having the cameras on and Bryce Cotton walking around and hugging Damian Martin and the excitement around it. It was won in a different way, different times, but I don't think it meant anything less. And I think that it will, yet again, we don't know who's going to be back for Sydney, obviously, but I'm talking Andrew Bogut, of course, Casper Ware maybe, but we'll see. You know, it'll drive these guys because, you know, we hear from these athletes in all sports where they're like, you know what, they drove us. We lost the grand final. We never want to taste, feel that again. And Sydney, while it wasn't a traditional loss in the way that we've grown accustomed to over the years, there's no doubt that in their minds and in their guts when they get back on preseason court, it'll drive them in some way to get that championship done.
My we'll end it there. Well, I've got one last little like yes or no section of stuff. Okay, about seven or eight of these. All right, is yours yeah or no, or is it yes or no?
Yes or no.
Yes or no. All right, here we go. Let's go yes or no. Is Michael Jordan better than Kobe Bryant and LeBron?
Yes.
Do you find it strange that he's known as Michael Jordan or Jordan more so than Kobe are known by their first names? Have you ever noticed that? That's not a yes or no. I just thought that was...
It's interesting.
Just a theory. Does Homicide talk too much?
No.
Agreed. Is Sean Long better than Andrew Bogut?
No. Probably had a better year, but no, not as a basketballer. He's still young though, Sean Long, which is something he's got a whole career to get there.
Should Andrew Bogut have been all NBL second team last season?
I'll say no because I didn't have him in my team, but they're a much different, better team when he's there.
Okay. Is White Men Can't Jump the best basketball movie ever made?
No.
Do you mind if I pull you up on that and clarify? Have you got?
It's two.
Okay.
Above the Rim.
Really?
Ja Rule basketball movie. It's unreal. I love it. They're right up there. I love Above the Rim.
Okay, Above the Rim, no problem. Here's one. Take some time to think about this. Was Corey Homicide Williams a better player than Cotton, Machado, and or Casper Ware?
No.
Are your cardigans store-bought?
Yes.
Okay, good. If you were an NBA player, would you have agreed to the 50% wage cut?
I'd say probably yes, without having really any intel. I think just on that, I don't think it's yet again in all sports. It's better to take a pay cut, and it's not going to make it easy on some athletes, no doubt. Mm. But it's better to take a pay cut than not have a league.
Yeah, agreed. Could you shoot free throws better than Josh Boone's 36% in NBL 20?
Yes.
What about Matt Hodgson's 44%?
It's probably testing me. It depends. Really? Am I doing this just by myself in a gym, or am I doing it in front of 5,000 people chanting
game
burgers?
Game conditions.
Yes.
Andrew Bogut's 58%. This is the one. Are you shooting 60%? Are you missing 4 of 10?
No. Oh, yes. I reckon I'd shoot game condition around 63%.
Okay, so that's a yes. You're just over Bogut. Okay.
Yes, just.
Here's a question for him. Did Liam Santamaria, your overtime co-host, did he play more minutes in the NBL than there are squares on a chessboard? It requires a bit of thinking. Did he play more minutes than there are squares on a chessboard?
No.
You're right, he didn't. There are 64 spaces on a chessboard, 8x8.
Yep.
He played 44 minutes.
There you go. Yeah, people actually underestimate how good Liam was as a point guard, actually. We spent a lot of time playing against each other.
One year
in the NBL, and I'll tell you what, and I'm not sure if you'll agree with this, but being at such a powerful team as he was for the 1 year of the Titans,
yeah,
probably stopped him playing. It's all about timing and all the rest of it. And then he got hurt with an Achilles a year or two later. So,
right.
Look, had he have been at a club, I can't remember exactly who might have struggled that particular year, but had he been at a club a little bit lesser talented than that Victorian Titans team, I think he would have definitely played a lot more minutes. I think people sometimes sleep on him, and that happens in sport where people end up somewhere. But yeah, he could really go.
He was sort of like a Sean Bruce mold. Is that a fair comp?
He's probably a better passer than Sean Bruce.
Okay.
Not a bit
stronger, maybe?
Good. So he's definitely stronger. Probably not. Actually, definitely not a jump shooter. He doesn't shoot as well as Sean Bruce. But yeah, he was very good to be able to get to the rim and find the right guy.
My last one for you, Cam, and I'll let you go. Did you wash your hands for 20 seconds or longer prior to this coronavirus? 20 seconds. I was
no,
I didn't either. I don't feel bad about that. I would have been I would have oscillated between sort of 8 and 15 tops. If I was 15, I was lost in thought washing my hands, maybe, but not 20. Yeah. That's something new. So that's it.
Two things I want to touch on quickly.
Please.
Just on the foul shots with Boone and Bogut and Hodgson. I'll tell you this, and I've said this on Overtime before, the Hungry Jacks promotion is one of the greatest promotions in world sport.
Yeah, it's neat.
Because to get the fans involved is brilliant, and I think it adds so much. The players that I have spoken to speak so much about how much pressure it actually adds. And just on your first question about Jordan over Kobe
and LeBron. Yeah.
Jordan's greatest of all time, but for the people who refuse to even acknowledge it's a conversation between LeBron James and Michael Jordan are the ones I refuse to have this conversation with, because I think Jordan is number one. So we get to the same answer, but if you are someone out there who legitimately doesn't believe that LeBron is number two and you don't give him props for so much that he has done, then we can't have that conversation. Because I think that LeBron is a lot closer to Jordan in the GOAT standings than people give him credit for. And I think in 10 years, 20 years' time, people will be like, you know what? That was pretty unbelievable what he did. He didn't get to Jordan, granted, but he wasn't far behind.
Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. Of course, rate, review, and more importantly, subscribe so that when a new episode comes out, you get it automatically. Thanks very much, and I'll see you next week.